Okay, let's unpack this. For millions of developers, their code editor, Visual Studio Code, VS, it's like their digital home, right? Their productivity sanctuary.
Absolutely. It's built on trust, this whole ecosystem of extensions people rely on.
Exactly. But what happens when that trust is just violently betrayed? And not by some super complex hidden attack, but, well, something hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, that's what we're diving deep into today. It's one of the more alarming software supply chain incidents we've seen recently, this ransomware thing, Susfex, found on Microsoft's official VS Code marketplace.
So our mission here is pretty clear. We need to break down how this thing actually worked and really look at the AI angle. How did AI make this kind of attack easier for maybe less experienced attackers?
And pull out the lessons, right? What does this teach organizations urgently about securing their dev environments? But look, if there's one thing to grab onto right at the start, it's the sheer boldness of it. The shock isn't the tech itself. It's that the extension's description openly admitted what it did. It literally said it would steal files and encrypt your data. AES 256 CBC encryption.
Hold on, they advertised it as ransomware and specifically mentioned AES 256.
They did, yeah. AES 256 CDC, I mean, that's the standard, military-grade encryption. It signals complete data lockdown.
So the publisher was basically putting up a sign saying digital mugging happening here.
Pretty much, right there on the store page. It wasn't subtle. It feels like it was almost a deliberate challenge, like poking the bear, testing the system.
Okay, so if it was that obvious, I mean, how did it even get noticed? And why wasn't it yanked immediately?
Right, so the credit for actually finding this, it goes to a security researcher, John Tuckner, from Secure Annex. He spotted the extension. Published in the account, Sus Publisher 18. Not exactly subtle, right?
Sus Publisher. Got it.
So Tuckner sees it, notes the crazy description, and does the right thing. Files a detailed report straight to Microsoft, explains the threat.
Okay, that's exactly what you'd hope for. Detailed report, explicit ransomware threat. You'd expect like an immediate shutdown,
Yeah.
automated flags going off everywhere.
You would think so. But astonishingly, nothing happened.
Nothing. Seriously.
Yeah, nothing. And that lapse, well, that's the real institutional failure here. Despite a clear, documented warning, the malicious code stayed up, available for download. It only got pulled later, significantly later, after the story blew up in the security press and blogs.
So that raises a huge question, doesn't it? For a critical marketplace like VS Codes,
Huh?
how does an extension description that literally says, I will encrypt your files, get past any vetting? I mean, basic checks.
It suggests some pretty big gaps, doesn't it? Maybe automated gaps, maybe human review gaps. You rely on these marketplaces as a first line of defense. And when something this crude, this blatant, slips through, well, it makes you think one of two things. Either the vetting is way more porous than anyone thought, or, like some researchers suspect, maybe this whole thing was a deliberate probe. The attacker just testing Microsoft's defenses. See how fast they react to something obviously bad, but maybe technically simple.
That's kind of chilling.
Yeah. Because if this gets through openly, what are the really sophisticated, stealthy actors managing to do?
The idea that it was just a test, that's almost worse than the ransomware itself.
Exactly. And it's alarming Microsoft missed it, sure. But when you actually look at the code, you see why this kind of attack is becoming such a threat now. The barrier to entry is just lower. Let's get into the mechanics of Susfex.
Let's dig into the technical side. How did it actually work? You said it was efficient.
It was, in a very simple way. So when you install it, or just launch VS Code after it's installed, the extension fires up. It runs its main payload from the standard extension.js file.
Okay, the JavaScript file.
And our sources, they show this file had everything hard-coded, all the instructions.
Hard-coded? Like what specifically? Attack parameters?
Exactly. IP addresses for where to send the stolen data, the encryption keys needed, the command and control server locations, the C2 servers, all just sitting there in the code, ready to run.
Okay, so it activates. What does it do first?
Well, the main function was called zip upload and encrypt. Pretty descriptive.
Yeah, it leaves little to the imagination.
So it first checks for a little marker file to see if it's already run on that machine. Standard practice avoids encrypting things multiple times.
Makes sense. Then what?
Then it just starts grabbing files, systematically creating ZIP archives of everything in certain targeted directories, likely developer folders, project files, that kind of thing.
The two-step harm. Steal first, encrypt later. So the data's gone before you even know you're locked out.
Precisely. The ZIP archives get uploaded, exfiltrated to the attacker's C2 server. That's the data breach. Then, only after the data is safely stolen, it swaps the original files with the encrypted versions. AES 256 CBC. Boom. Your files are useless.
Classic ransomware flow, just delivered through a supposedly trusted extension. Now, let's talk about this AI angle. That seems to be the really forward-looking piece here. Tuckner's analysis suggested this wasn't written by some elite hacker.
That's right. There were clues in the code comments left in, the structure of it, that made researchers think the publisher probably used generative AI tools, you know, like ChatGPT or Copilot, to actually write the malicious parts.
They called it vibe coding.
Yeah, vibe coding. Like, you tell the AI the vibe of what you want, make something that steals files and encrypts them, and it spits out the code.
And the result was called AI slop. Okay, but calling it slop, doesn't that kind of downplay the threat? I mean, it worked, it got deployed, the damage is real, even if the code isn't elegant.
No, that's a fair point. Look, the code might be messy, right? Kind of cobbled together, hence slop.
Right.
But you can't argue with the fact that it worked, at least enough to get deployed.
Its effectiveness, well.
It's undeniable, even if it's sloppy. Exactly.
Yeah.
The term's really significant because it shows how AI... it just slams that barrier to entry down for attackers. You don't need to be a malware coding genius anymore.
You just need to know how to ask the AI the right questions.
Basically. Prompt engineering for evil.
Yeah.
It kind of democratizes ransomware. Turns someone with maybe limited coding skills into a functional threat actor almost overnight.
Okay, so the ransomware part was pretty straightforward, if crudely made. But the C2, the command and control, that sounds like they got a bit more creative, almost abusive of other platforms.
Oh, definitely. What's really interesting here is the platform abuse. Instead of setting up their own dodgy server that screams malware, they use GitHub.
GitHub? How?
The extension was programmed to just check a private GitHub repository periodically. It would look at a specific file in there, something innocent sounding like index.html, waiting for new instructions from the attacker.
Okay, that's clever from their side. Because traffic to GitHub from a developer's machine looks completely normal, right? How did Tuckner even figure that out if the repo is private?
Ah, well, this is where the attacker made a massive mistake. A huge operational security blunder. To access that private GitHub repo, the extension needed authentication.
Naturally.
And they hard-coded the personal access token, the PAT, right into the extension.js file.
Uh-huh.
The same file that gets downloaded by anyone installing the extension.
Oof. A hard-coded PAT? That is, wow, a cardinal sin in development.
Absolutely catastrophic for them. Tuckner could just read the code, grab the PAT, and boom, full access to the attacker's private command center.
So they could see everything, the commands, maybe logs.
Yep. See the commands being sent, gather info about infected hosts, activity logs, which is actually what helped researchers trace the likely origin back to Azerbaijan. The PAT was basically a gift-wrapped key to their entire operation.
So thinking bigger picture now, using GitHub for C2 isn't just about stealth, is it? It gives the attacker other advantages.
For sure. It gives them amazing persistence and agility. They can remotely control the infected machines after the initial deployment. They can just update that index.html file in the private repo with new commands. Maybe tell the malware to target different files, steal different data, even try to spread further. All without having to push a whole new malicious extension update through the marketplace, which would now be on high alert.
So it weaponizes a trusted service.
Exactly. Yeah. It really highlights this trend we're seeing everywhere.
Yeah.
Abusing legitimate platforms is becoming standard practice for cybercrime. It's just easier and stealthier.
Okay, so we've got the attack, the marketplace failure, the AI making it easier. What does this mean for actual developers using VS Code day to day and for the companies they work for? The big takeaway feels like you just can't assume safety anymore, even from official sources.
It's a massive flashing red light, yeah. This whole incident is just a brutal reminder. Even official marketplaces from big names like Microsoft can host dangerous stuff. Developers really have to start treating every third-party extension like it's potentially hostile code. Assume zero trust.
So for our listeners, the developers out there using VS Code right now, let's get practical. What specific things should you look for before hitting install on an extension? Not just generic advice, but VS Code specific flags.
Okay, first, permissions. You have to scrutinize them aggressively. Look in the extension's manifest file.
Mm-hmm.
Is it asking for really broad access? Like workspace.ss access that's full file system read-write.
Right.
Or broad network access.
Right.
If some simple theme or syntax highlighter wants to read all your files and talk to the internet, that's a giant red flag. Ask why.
Okay, permissions first. What else?
Vet the publisher. Don't just look at the star rating. check their history. Is the publisher account brand new? Do they have hardly any downloads across their extensions? Be extra cautious, especially if the extension claims to do something complex.
Makes sense. Anything else?
Yeah, and this one takes time, but for really critical extensions or ones from unknown publishers, look in the source code if you can. VS Code extensions are often just JavaScript or TypeScript bundled up.
So pop the hood?
Yeah. Do a quick static analysis. Look for weird stuff like functions related to zipping lots of files or making network calls to strange places, or maybe suspicious looking encoded strings that could be keys. It's becoming necessary due diligence for important tools.
Okay, that's for the individual dev. But shifting up a level to the organizations, this needs systemic changes too, right? Companies' security policies.
Absolutely crucial now. Companies must mandate some kind of formal security review for all development tools and extensions before they get rolled out widely.
And that review needs to be more than just checking the marketplace page.
Way more. It should include that static code analysis we just talked about. Don't just trust the marketplace reputation. And critically, endpoint detection and response EDR tools. They need to be on developer machines and specifically tuned to spot suspicious developer activity.
That sounds tricky. Developer machines are noisy places, right? Lots of compiling, downloading. What's unusual behavior there?
That is the challenge, yeah.
Yeah.
The EDR needs fine-tuning. It should look for specific patterns, like suddenly reading thousands of files, then compressing them rapidly. They're making big uploads to weird places, maybe GitHub repos you don't normally interact with.
Mm-hmm.
Security teams need to baseline what normal looks like for their devs to spot the danger signal.
Okay, and worst case scenario, a company finds out this extension or something like it was installed. What's the immediate playbook?
Speed and decisiveness are key. First, disconnect that machine from the network immediately. Physically unplug it, disable the Wi-Fi, whatever. Air gap it.
Why first?
Stops two things cold. Stops more data being stolen, exfiltrated, and cuts off that C2 communication so the attacker can't send new commands or pivot.
Got it. Yeah. Work off.
Uninstall the extension, obviously. Run a deep malware scan with good tools. And then, the critical part, restore everything from clean backups. Code bases, project files, everything potentially touched. Don't trust the current state. And crucially, if you suspect a party 8 or any credential was exposed, like in this case, you have to revoke it immediately everywhere it might have been used. #... outro.
So wrapping this up, the SUSX incident, it really feels like a convergence point, doesn't it? You've got AI making malware easier to create.
Mm-hmm, even if it's slop.
Right. And you've got this clear failure in the software supply chain vetting, unable to catch even an attacker who basically announced their intentions.
Yeah, it proved the security systems weren't even handling the obvious threats, let alone the sneaky ones. It's a stark picture.
It really forces a reckoning, I think, for developers and for organizations. The whole idea that this, well, rudimentary code slipped through and maybe only failed to encrypt data widely because it got publicized, that just shatters a trust model for marketplaces.
It does. And it forces us, really, to ask a pretty uncomfortable question. A challenge to how we think about security right now.
Which is?
If a crude, openly advertised attack like this can breach the gates, what does that really imply about the AI-generated malware that is designed to be sophisticated, designed to be stealthy, zero trust, properly hidden from day one? What's already inside the walls that we haven't found yet?
That definitely leaves a question for you listening right now. How sure are you, really, about those extensions running in your own VS Code environment? Something to think about.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.